Following is a live presentation of CITR News.
CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Rita Farkas.
Good evening. In the news this week, 80 Mexican would-be immigrants have been turned away from the province, and callers across BC will have to get used to dialing more digits when placing calls. We'll have all this, plus arts and your weekend forecast coming up this half hour right here on News 101. The use of medical marijuana to relieve pain and other disease symptoms can cause a range of adverse effects. This according to an analysis of safety studies co-authored by UBC and McGill University researchers. The study found that while nearly 97% of adverse effects were not serious, medical marijuana users still have a significant increase in adverse effects like drowsiness and dizziness. Dr. Jean-Paul Collette, one of the study authors, said that because of the small number of cases in patients, it is impossible to say whether the serious effects were directly related to the cannabis products. Results of the study were published in the June 17th Canadian Medical Association Journal. Now, with a look at other UBC and local news, here is News 101 reporter Charlotte Nobles.
A study released last week by Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives and the BC Federation of Labour paints a grim picture of BC's agricultural industry. The study found temporary workers in BC lack health facilities, are exposed to unsafe working conditions, and are paid inadequate wages. UBC's Mark Thompson co-authored the study, and he said he was shocked by the findings. The report, which interviewed 28 immigrants and 25 migrant workers, found the average wage for an immigrant farm worker was $8.20 an hour. It also found a lack of basic safety and hygiene. The main complaint by immigrants who worked outside was the lack of sanitary facilities, such as bathrooms and running water, or a proper place to eat. The study found that housing currently offered to workers varies from adequate to far below legal standards. BC Labour Minister Olga Illich called the study slanted, adding her ministry is doing more inspections than it has in the past.
And the provincial government announced it will convert a portion of the UBC Robson Square campus into a massive international media facility for the 2010 Winter Games. The center will serve members of the media who are unable to obtain accreditation by the International Olympic Committee for access to the main media facility at the Vancouver Convention and Exhibition Center. Annette Antoniak, the CEO of the BC Olympic and Paralympic Secretariat, said the province's unaccredited media center follows a long tradition of host cities offering facilities to journalists who don't qualify for the limited number of IOC passes.
UBC physicians developed an impossible technique to study and develop superconductors. The team developed a technique that controls the number of electrons on the surface of high-temperature superconductors, a procedure considered impossible for the past two decades. The details are published this week in the prestigious journal Nature Physics. Superconductivity, the phenomenon of conducting electricity with no resistance, occurs in some materials at very low temperatures. High-temperature superconductors are a class of materials capable of conducting electricity with little or no resistance in temperatures as high as minus 140 degrees Celsius.
And 80 would-be immigrants from Mexico were turned away from the Vancouver airport on Friday and sent back home. The group had responded to an advertisement which promised opportunities in Canada in exchange for their money. Canada Border Services Agency representative Faith St. John says that it is unusual for such a large group to be turned away at the border, although it is not unusual for someone to be refused entry into Canada. The 80 Mexicans were held at the airport until a flight could be found to take them home.
This morning, a group of determined mothers, children, and family members set out to walk across Canada. Between 50 and 200 participants set out from Trout Lake this morning for a Walk for Justice, a relay-style walk which will end at Parliament Hill, where they will present a petition which addressed issues surrounding the problem of missing and murdered women in Canada. The participants will only stop walking to sleep, but they say that they will be greeted by many supporters throughout the country and that new walkers will join along the way. One of the founders of Walk for Justice, Gladys Raddick, said that they have supporters lined up from just about every community along the Trans-Canada Highway, with crews even coming down from the Northwest Territories and New Brunswick.
If you live outside the Lower Mainland, you'll need to get used to more digits. Starting Monday, residents across BC will need to start using 10 digits when dialing phone numbers rather than just 7. This means adding the 250 area code for local calls. British Columbians will have an almost 2-month transition period during which they can still punch in 7 digits only, but will have to hear a reminder about the 10-digit change. On September 8th, only 10-digit calls will be connected throughout BC. TELUS says the changes are occurring because of the growing number of telephones in the system. They say they are running out of numbers to allocate. And it's now time for a quick break, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
The Biltmore Cabaret at 395 Kingsway, Vancouver's newest live showroom devoted to independent music of all genres. Check out biltmorecabaret.com for upcoming show info and DJ nights.
The June issue of Discorder magazine is on the streets now, featuring interviews with cabaret songstress Amanda Lepore, Vancouver indie darlings Hey Ocean, The Clips, and The Awkward Stage, as well as the monthly concert calendar, top 50 music chart, and CITR program guide.
Discorder, that Patsy magazine from CITR 101.9 FM, can be found in room 233 of the Student Union Building at UBC, or wherever is remotely cool in Vancouver. Pick up a copy today. 'Cause you're all right in my eyes.
I will forgive you. Come join the free evening gala talks of the 3rd annual Wall Summer Institute for Research on June 23rd and June 25th. To reserve your tickets, call 604-822-1291. The Peter Wall Institute for Advanced Studies at UBC will bring together invited participants from around the world to explore the implications of a globalized capitalism for the future of agrarian society. On June 23rd from 6 to 7:30 at the Sheraton Wall Center, Jomo Kwame Sundaram from the United Nations will present Washington Rediscovers Agriculture, the Political Economy of the Agrarian Turn. And on June 25th, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Freddie Wood Theater at UBC, Emmanuel Wallerstein from Yale University will speak on the return of the peasant. Possible? Desirable? Both of these events are free, but tickets must be reserved in advance by phoning 604-822-1291. Once again, that number is 604-822-1291.
Come join the free evening gala talks of the 3rd annual Wall Summer Institute for Research on June 23rd and June 25th. To reserve your tickets, call 604-822-1291. The Peter Wall Institute for Advanced Studies at UBC will bring together invited participants from around the world to explore the implications of a globalized capitalism for the future of agrarian society. On June 23rd from 6 to 7:30 at the Sheraton Wall Center, Jomo Kwame Sundaram from the United Nations will present Washington Rediscovers Agriculture, the Political Economy of the Agrarian Turn. On June 25th, from 6 to 7:30, at Freddie Wood Theater at UBC, Emmanuel Wallerstein from Yale University will speak on the return of the peasant. Possible? Desirable? The events are free, but tickets must be reserved in advance by phone at 604-822-1291. Once again, that number is 604-822-1291.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:12 p.m. Think cigarettes are bad? How about the latest craze, cigarillos? The Canadian Cancer Society is now calling on the federal government to ban the flavored cigarettes, which are similar to cigars but come in smaller packages and have candy-like flavors. A national survey recently found that a high number of teens are using the product. Now the Cancer Society is concerned that experimenting with cigarillos could result in addiction. Rob Cunningham of the Cancer Society says the product could be a starter product for children and adds that they are just as addictive and harmful as regular cigarettes. Worse still, health warnings on cigarillo packages are less prominent than those on cigarettes. The 2006-2007 Youth Smoking Survey, released by the University of Waterloo on Monday, found that 35% of grade 10 to 12 students reported trying cigars, cigarillos, and little cigars. The survey of 71,000 students in grades 5 to 12 from across Canada found that 48% had tried cigarettes. And in international news, Free Speech Radio News brings us the latest from the West Bank.
Francis Nicolas Sarkozy is in Israel today, marking the first visit to the country by a French president in a dozen years. Sarkozy staunchly pledged to protect the Jewish state from a nuclear threat by Iran and proposed sending French troops to help Israel. Poising himself as a Middle East peace broker, Sarkozy also criticized Jewish settlers in the West Bank, saying there can be no peace without putting an end to the settlements in the occupied territories. On a high hill overlooking several existing Israeli settlements, one Palestinian family has been fighting Israel's effort to take its land for almost two decades. FSRN's Melinda Tuhus reports from Bethlehem.
In 1916, my grandfather bought this piece of land. It's about 100 acres, southwest of Bethlehem. And he came with his family, and they used to live in a cave.
Daoud Nasser leads a group of visitors over his land, which includes a house, several spacious, cool caves, farm animals, and many acres planted to olive and other fruit trees. He says on a clear day, the family can watch the sunset over the Mediterranean Sea. They must park their van and walk in about a kilometer from where the Israeli army rolled a huge boulder to close off the road. The Israeli army controls every facet of life for Palestinians in the West Bank. The family has proof of continuous ownership since 1916, but, he says,
in 1991, Israel declared the whole area as a state land, and so the legal battle started from 1991, and it's still running until today.
Nasser explains that along with that declaration came many restrictions.
On the property itself, we are not allowed to have running water, no electricity, and no building permit. When you look surrounding the area, you see many Israeli settlements are expanded and still expanding on Palestinian land. It's a frustration for us, of course, but never give up hope for a better future.
To use and protect their land, Nasser's family has established Tent of Nations, a project bringing together Palestinians, Israelis, and internationals who come to work the land. The name is inspired by the big green tents that house the guests. Nasser also runs a summer camp for local children. An artist from the UK helped kids design and create beautiful mosaics with biblical and cultural themes that grace the outside walls of the house. The caves are now an office, a meeting room, and an equipment storage room. Bill Mims visited Nasser and his land a few years ago as part of an interfaith peace delegation. Upon returning to the U.S., he helped found Friends of Tent of Nations North America to support the work financially, to encourage Americans to visit the site near Bethlehem, and to promote Nasser's efforts in the U.S. The Friends group brings Nasser and his wife, Jihan, to the U.S. periodically for speaking tours.
I was particularly touched by what appears to me to be an enormous amount of oppression that he is living with, along with other Palestinians, and the way that he chose to respond to it. He chose to respond to it using his anger, his rage, his frustration, as he calls it, in a positive way, and particularly in a nonviolent positive way. I believe that the way out of the mess in the Middle East is going to involve nonviolence, and so I'm trying to support that in any way I can.
In the midst of these tribulations, Nasser remains hopeful.
The issue is we want to go beyond the Arab-Israeli conflict and find people to establish something like a civil movement, because I have no hope on the political level to achieve anything, you know. So we need to invest in the people, Israelis, Palestinians, internationals, because these people can change the situation.
When contacted for this story, a spokesman for the Israeli Ministry of Defense confirmed that Nasser's lands, quote, were declared state lands by the Israeli authorities in accordance with all the relevant directives in this case, unquote. He added that Nasser had withdrawn his appeal before the High Court of Justice in 2007, a claim Nasser categorically denies. Nasser said his family has so far spent $100,000 on legal efforts to secure their land and keep it from turning into another Israeli settlement, and they have no intention of giving up. For FSRN, I'm Melinda Tuhus, reporting from Bethlehem.
And thanks to FSRN for that piece. Up next, another report from Free Speech Radio News on the Zimbabwe opposition leader seeking refuge from the Dutch embassy.
The leader of Zimbabwe's main opposition party, Morgan Tsvangirai, has taken refuge at the Dutch embassy in Harare. The move comes after Tsvangirai's Movement for Democratic Change, or MDC, party decided to withdraw from this week's presidential runoff election against Robert Mugabe, which was scheduled to take place this coming Friday. At least 200,000 people have been displaced in the lead-up to the election, 20,000 homes have been destroyed, and at least 80 MDC supporters have been killed at the hands of thugs acting out in support of Mugabe's ruling ZANU-PF party. In a press conference Sunday, Tsvangirai stated the state's brutal repression as cause for withdrawing from the election.
We will no longer participate in this violent, illegitimate sham of an election process.
Meanwhile, Western nations are weighing in on the trouble in Zimbabwe. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown today called Mugabe's regime illegitimate. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice made a similar statement. European Commission spokesman John Clancy says countries in the region must step up and do more towards finding a solution in Zimbabwe.
It's absolutely essential that African leaders stand united to say that the current situation of intimidation and state-sponsored violence is simply unacceptable.
The African Union is not scheduled to meet again until next week. We're joined on the line by Michael Swigert of Africa Action. Michael, one can't help but wonder if Zimbabweans would be in this position if regional leaders and South Africa's Thabo Mbeki specifically had stepped up to call out Mugabe's brutal regime. Now Mbeki appears to be trying to get Mugabe and Tsvangirai to meet together, but now Tsvangirai, of course, has taken refuge in the Dutch embassy. What can Southern African leaders do now to help find a solution in Zimbabwe?
I think what's really critical is that the Southern African development community show a united front in its approach to promoting democracy in Zimbabwe. Besides Mbeki, you've seen a lot of other SADC leaders, particularly the president of Zambia, very outspoken about the a negative electoral environment. Hopefully we're going to see in the next couple of days Mbeki come around and play a constructive role as the lead negotiator, as he's been appointed by SADC, along with the rest of the Southern African leadership, as well as the broader international community and the United Nations, to present sort of a united front in pushing towards a way forward.
Mugabe's people are saying that the election is still going to take place as planned on Friday, which is somewhat unbelievable considering the mounting pressure that Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party is facing. Do you think that these elections will actually take place as planned?
If anything's possible in terms of that they could actually have polls open. The environment building up to it right now has been such that, you know, no meaningful, free and fair, transparent elections would be able to take place. I think what really needs to happen, and this has been apparent even before Morgan Tsvangirai announced that he was going to pull out, this has been apparent for several weeks, is that there needs to be some sort of temporary transitional arrangement between the different political groups to come together and create a climate where sometime in the near future there's going to be able to have an environment where you could have real free and fair elections.
And what do you think is next for Zimbabwe? There's been talk of a national unity government. How likely is that to happen now?
I think at this point that is the necessary step forward. Whether or not it happens depends on all the parties. Most critically, ZANU-PF is the one who has control, obviously. I'm optimistic, although we've talked to some folks on the ground recently who've said that things may get worse before they get better, but this week is going to be a very challenging one. But after that, I think some sort of transitional arrangement does seem likely. There are several big challenges, though, that a transitional arrangement would have. One is that you need to make sure that that is a time-limited, short-term arrangement rather than just a long-term government of national unity so that electoral justice does come forward at some point. There also needs to be serious reform to the Constitution, democratization and professionalization of state institutions, including security forces, the judiciary, and the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, as well as economic policies to address the sort of simultaneous economic crisis that Zimbabwe has faced.
Michael Swigert is a policy associate with Africa Action.
And thanks again to FSRN for that piece. It's now time for another break, but when we come back, we'll hear an update on the local art scene. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
If you look into a book, you might just say, I had fun just like Run, DMC and Jay.
Flash your Friends of CITR card and get discounts at Lucky's Comics, RX Comics, Magpie Magazine, People's Co-op Bookstore, and Spartacus Books. Support CITR and pick up your card today.
Come and enjoy Italian Week at the Vancouver Italian Cultural Center. A week full of delicious entertainment from June 22nd through to the 28th. Opening day is Sunday, June 22nd, and will feature music, Italian gastronomic delights, market vendors, the Friends of Ferrari race for the kids, and lots of fun for the entire family. Monday through Friday will present exciting Italian cultural performance, free of charge. The week will end on Saturday, June 28th, with a fantastic banquet and dance, featuring an impressive multi-regional, multi-course menu of Italian specialties. So join us for a week of celebration and Italian fun. We look forward to welcoming you at the Italian Cultural Center, 3075 Slocan Street, Vancouver. Visit our website for more details and the complete Italian Week entertainment program at www.italianculturalcenter.ca or call us at 604-430-3337.
Are you a band or musician located in Vancouver or the Lower Mainland? We're now accepting entries for Shindig 2008. All styles are welcome, whether you're a solo country artist or a 10-piece punk band.
You'll need to send us a minimum 3-song demo of original material, plus your contact information. Put everything in an envelope. Mail it or drop it off before August 8th to Shindig 2008, CITR Radio, number 233/6138, Sub Boulevard, Vancouver, BC, V6T1Z1, Canada.
We also love web-based submissions, such as ones via MySpace or electronic press kits. Please email shindig.08@gmail.com.
You know, as much as I hate to brag about Shindig, I must say tonight we got a Shindig for you that is so far in, it's out of sight.
On Thursday, May 29, at 7 p.m., come down to Tom Lee Music Hall for The Beautiful Struggle, a film screening of the documentary Diamonds in the Rough.
Ugandan youth culture has seen the recent emergence of hip-hop music as a culturally relevant and politically viable means of conveyance of positive ideas, political change, and community outreach. The documentary Diamonds in the Rough explores the lives of several young Ugandan hip-hop artists inspired to create politically and socially motivated music to spread their message of peaceful change to their communities and the world. The film will be followed by a Q&A with one of the stars of the film, Salas, followed by a rare live performance.
That's Beautiful Struggle, Thursday, May 29th at Tom Lee Music Hall, 3rd floor, 929 Granville Street. For more info, visit www.beautifulstruggle.ca.
Ah! Welcome back to News 101 in the Summer. I'm Rita Farkas, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. It's now time for an arts report with Charlotte Nobles.
Coming up this week in music, on June 26, Reverend Horton Heat will be playing a show at the Commodore. Drive-By Truckers will be at the Biltmore Cabaret on June 27. The Constantines are at Richards on Richards on June 26. And also on June 26, Matt Good and his band will be at the Orpheum. This week, be sure to catch Italian Week at the Italian Cultural Center, which will feature free musical performances, poetry, and theater. Tomorrow night is the final evening of Festival d'Été, the Francophone Music Festival. The Vancouver International Jazz Festival is in full swing, and some performances you may want to check out this week include the Brad Meldow Trio, Fond of Tigers, Molly Johnson, Carcestra, and Friday's performance of the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra with Wynton Marsalis. In theater, Orphans, the story of two young orphaned brothers, will be at the Fire Hall Arts Center until June 28th. Corteo, the new Cirque du Soleil show, will be playing until July 13th at Concord Pacific Place. The Producers, the Mel Brooks musical comedy, will be at the Stanley Industrial Alliance stage until July 13th. The Back Kitchen Release Party, the musical adventure of a Newfoundland band on their way to Vancouver, will be at the Granville Island stage until August 2nd. Also, Bard on the Beach is back at Vanier Park this summer with King Lear, The Tempest, Twelfth Night, and Titus Andronicus.
And thanks to Charlotte for that quick arts update. And now we're going to go to Selena Ferris for a look at this week's weather forecast. Selena?
After a front passes overnight, we are looking at a nice week. Overnight cloudiness will increase with a chance of showers lasting until tomorrow morning. Conditions will begin to clear throughout Tuesday to a mix of sun and cloud for the rest of the day and a high of 18. These conditions will continue through Wednesday with a mix of sun and cloud all day and a high of 19. The end of the week will feel just like summer, sunny with a few cloudy periods and highs in the 20s. That's your five-day weather brought to you by the Storm Club at UBC. For more information, you can email us at stormubc@gmail.com.
And thanks, Selena. That's our program for Monday, June 23rd, 2008. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Carrie Baptist produced this radio program. For more news, join us Monday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team here at CITR, this is Rita Farkas thanking you for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Tracks coming up next on 101.9 FM CITR.
Another night's work well done. And so easy without that music.